Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, January 9th. Two late developments on Friday, coupled with a lousy jobs report earlier in the day, reaffirmed we have an economy that, while no longer in intensive care, still remains in recovery. First, consumer credit for the month of November dropped a record $17.5 billion. The 10th consecutive month of declines, which just shows you the retail state of the consumer. Yes, as some of the Christmas shopping season data revealed this week, I may have been wrong in forecasting that sales would decline. One of the two barometers I grade myself on, the International Council of Shopping Centers, said December sales were up 2.8%, though down 2% for all of 2009. I now await the National Retail Federation's report, which should come out shortly. Some retailers, such as Saks, up 9.9%, did well. Some, like Macy's, up 1%, hung in there. And others, such as Abercrombie & Fitch, down 19%, laid an egg. But I guess I didn't do a good enough job of taking into account was how lean many of the stores kept inventories, and thus you didn't see the drastic price cutting we had in 2008. But bottom line, there is zero compelling reason to go shopping today, unless you forgot to buy a winter coat and you've already used up your 2010 sick days as a result. Second big development Friday afternoon concerns California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's declaration of fiscal emergency as his state faces yet another cash crisis as he tries to close a new $19.9 billion deficit. There is simply no conceivable way to avoid more cuts and more pain, he said. It means more furloughs for state workers if they aren't fired outright, or in effect, further wage cuts. Those folks are not likely to be rushing to the mall to buy frivolous things. Most other states in the country face increasing pain of their own as revenues continue to slide. So, the consumer credit and California items came on the heels of Friday morning's employment report for December that showed the nation losing another 85,000 jobs, though November's figure was revised upward to show a gain of 4,000. Yes, progress is being made on this front in terms of a trend since the beginning of 2009, but we have a long, long ways to go. Plus, while the official unemployment rate remains at 10%, the unofficial rate is still mired in the 17% area as more and more simply leave the job market. And we all know that the lion's share of jobs that do become available are more often than not for less pay than one made before, along with reduced benefits. So we're left with the same issues. The stimulus has indeed prevented the situation from being worse and will continue to do so in 2010. But once it wears off, then what? The inventory readjustment will be completed shortly, and I suspect you'll see heavy discounting in February and March at some stores. State and local governments remain in desperate straits to the detriment of workers. We continue to have tremendous overcapacity in areas such as shopping malls and hotels. Macy's and Foot Locker are two recent examples of chains that continue to close locations. But some comment, including on the recommended next move for the Federal Reserve. First, Paul Krugman, New York Times. It's not unusual for the economy to have a strong quarter amidst a recessionary type of economy. They're usually caused by an inventory bounce. When the economy slumps, companies typically find themselves with large stocks of unsold goods. To work off their excess inventories, they slash production. Once the excess has been disposed of, they raise production again, which shows up as a burst of growth in GDP. Unfortunately, growth caused by an inventory bounce is a one-shot affair unless underlying sources of demand, such as consumer spending and long-term investment, pick up. Which brings us to the still grim fundamentals of the economic situation. Krugman continues, during the good years of the last decade, such as they were, growth was driven by a housing boom and a consumer spending surge. Neither is coming back. There can't be a new housing boom while the nation is still strewn with vacant houses and apartments left behind by the previous boom, and consumers, who are $11 trillion poorer than they were before the housing bust, are in no position to return to the buy-now-save-never habits of yore. And Krugman's main argument is that the Federal Reserve must recognize the job of fighting the slump isn't finished. Congress, he says, in calling for further stimulus, must realize the same or, if both, don't. 2010 will be a year that began in false economic hope and ended in grief, says Krugman. But then you have Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City President Thomas Hoenig, who said in a highly publicized speech this week that the Fed must move sooner rather than later to reduce its stimulus and begin raising interest rates. Hoenig, who has a vote on the Open Market Committee this year, said, quote, "The process of returning policy to a more balanced weighing of short-run and longer-run economic financial goals should occur sooner rather than later. Maintaining excessively low interest rates for a lengthy period runs the risk of creating new kinds of asset misallocations, more volatile and higher long-run inflation, and more unemployment. Not today, perhaps, but in the medium and longer run." Hoenig added, "The Federal Reserve must curtail its emergency credit and financial market support programs, raise the federal funds rate target from zero back to a more normal level, probably between 3.5% and 4.5%, and restore its balance sheet to pre-crisis size and configuration. Fiscal and monetary stimulus will continue to provide major support to the economy. Much of the fiscal stimulus package announced last year will have its impact in 2010, and it might well be more substantial than initially projected due to delays in implementing spending programs." That was Thomas Hoenig. Globally, in Asia and Australia, the action is positive. Retail sales are rising amid an improving export picture, while in China, manufacturing, as measured by the PMI, hit its best level in 5 years, 56.1. It was 55.6 in India, 50 being the dividing line between growth and contraction. China's central bank, though, tightened slightly to slow excessive lending due to ongoing bubble concerns. The picture in Europe, however, remains mixed. The 16-nation Eurozone unemployment rate hit 10%, same as ours, in November. Only 3.9% in the Netherlands, in case you want to go Dutch, while it ticked up to 9.5% in the 27-nation European Union, including non-Euro Britain. Eurozone manufacturing hit 51.6 on the PMI for December. The UK's was 54.1. But Eurozone retail sales fell 1.2% in November. Europe also has its ongoing sovereign debt issues, such as in Greece, with no mechanism in place should the EU want to bail it out, which isn't likely. But back to the States, where many of us really are fired up for the NFL playoffs after being deluged with largely meaningless college bowl games. Pending home sales unexpectedly plummeted for the month of November. Economist Martin Feldstein, in sounding his ongoing cautionary note for economic activity, said housing obviously remains a major concern. Stimulus for both housing and the auto sector is either expired or is about to, and bank lending is still at dismal levels. Lastly, I remain focused, as never before, on the geopolitical scene. By the day, the picture gets worse. Stocks got off to a great start for 2010 on the heels of early positive news on manufacturing and construction spending in the U.S. before the dour employment data at week's end, with the Dow Jones rising 1.8% to 10,618 and the S&P 500 up 2.7%. NASDAQ tacked on 2.1%. Earnings season begins this coming week, and it's all about any future guidance that companies opt to cough up. And just a note on the weather. That's what it's been all about these days. Around the world, some headlines from the past week. Frigid temps rack up records as winter's wrath grips much of USA. Harsh storm batters island off the coast of Russia. North Asia pummeled by icy snap. Seoul battles heaviest snow in more than 70 years. Snow paralyzes Beijing. Britain's four-day battle against worst snow in 23 years. No end in sight as freeze tightens grip on country. That was Ireland. Snow brings disruptions in Europe. They're going to have another big blast this weekend. And some tidbits. A village in Poland was split in two after flooding and ice collapsed bridges. In central Norway, the temperature hit -42 Fahrenheit, the coldest in decades. The UK is the coldest in 30 years. Southwestern France was hit by a rare heavy snow. 16 inches fell in some London suburbs. Beijing had a foot of snow, the biggest snowfall for January in 50 years. It's the coldest there in 40 years. Seoul's snowfall, over 10 inches, was the worst since Korea began conducting meteorological surveys in 1937. But my buddy Mark R., a.k.a. Mr. Sunspot, says he's waiting for Lake Ontario to completely freeze over, which has happened only twice in the past 100 years, not that Mark and I will then go ice fishing. But then you have a headline like this, Australia in hottest decade on record. It's not only the hottest decade, but 2009 was the second warmest since records began there. I've always written that Australia is ground zero when it comes to the climate change debate. Others say it's simply all about El Nino. By the way, because of recent heavy rains in parts of Australia, there is an outbreak of the painful and debilitating Ross River virus after a huge increase in mosquito numbers. Ross River causes excruciating joint pain as well as fever, rashes, and sometimes long-term fatigue. Get this, residents of flood-affected towns have reported plague numbers of large mosquitoes. Well, that's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Go Jets! Happy 75th birthday, Elvis. And for further details, check out my Week in Review on stocksandnews.com. Take care.